Baruchim Abayim, ladies. We continue our study of Perashat HaShavua. This being Perashat HaSaveh. An interesting observation in Perashat HaSaveh is that Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not mentioned in the entire Perashah. And that's something to note, because since Moshe Rabbeinu was born in Perashat Shemot, his name is mentioned in every Perashah thereafter. So the rabbis are all perplexed, why then in Perashat HaSaveh is his name left out? The rabbis answer that usually the calendar, the way it works itself out, is Perashat HaSaveh will always come during the week of Moshe Rabbeinu's death. This Tuesday, this past Tuesday, was Zayin Adar. Zayin Adar, we commemorate Moshe Rabbeinu's death. So Moshe Rabbeinu was missing. So therefore, in the Perashah that always coincides with his Yahrzeit, his name is missing, in order to remind everybody that Moshe Rabbeinu this week is gone. There's another explanation why his name is missing. Because Moshe Rabbeinu prayed for that. Why would he pray for such a thing? After the Jewish people worshipped their Egel, the golden calf, God was upset at his people. And God said, I'm going to destroy them, and I'm going to start from scratch again. And we'll see if the next nation is more obedient. Moshe Rabbeinu, being the ultimate leader, did not tell God, okay, do what you want. You want to trade them in for another nation? Moshe Rabbeinu said, impossible. If you're going to trade them in, then erase me from your book. Which means Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, if they're going down, take me down with them. Moshe Rabbeinu did not abandon the ship. Moshe Rabbeinu says, mechenina. Erase me, misifrecha asher katavta. Erase me from your book. So when God heard that, God said, well, I don't want to erase Moshe Rabbeinu from the Torah. Therefore, I'll leave the Jewish people. I'm not going to trade them in. God heard his claim. But since Moshe Rabbeinu did request his name to be erased from the book, God erased him from at least one perashah. The reason being because the word that Moshe Rabbeinu used was, mehenina misifrecha. Misifrecha literally means from your book. But we can also read the word misifrecha, misifer chaf, from the 20th book. The 20th perashah in the Torah is Perashat HaSaveh. So therefore, since Moshe Rabbeinu said misifrecha, misifer chaf, they omitted his name in perashah. Perashah is the most difficult perashah again, discussing the different clothes of the Kohen Gadol. One of the things the Torah tells us about the clothes of the Kohen Gadol comes from a Gemara Shabbat, Daf Lamed Aleph. Most interesting story. Gemara says, and I quote, Shuv ma'aseh benochri ehad. There was one time a goy, a Gentile, Shaya over achore bet ha-midrash. He was walking by the yeshiva. Seems the windows were open, and he started to listen what the rabbis were talking about. V'shama kol sofer shaya omer. He heard the reader saying out loud, Ve'elde abegadim asher yasu choshen efod. He started to talk about the ornate garments of the Kohen Gadol. And the goy was impressed. He never heard such garments. A gold headband, a coat with bells on the bottom, a breastplate with the most precious stones. He was enthralled by it. Amar, he said, halalu lemi. Who wears these clothes? Where do you get these clothes from? Amru lo, they told him, the Kohen Gadol. That this is special, this is for the Kohen Gadol. Amar oto nochri ba'atzmo. So the goy said to himself, elech ve'etgayir. I'm going to convert b'shvir shiyisimuni Kohen Gadol. In order that I can become the Kohen Gadol and wear these garments. He was so amazed. He says, how do you wear these things? He knew he couldn't wear them as a goy. So he figured if he converts,
Maybe they'll make him a Kohen Gadol. Ba'lifne Shammai. So he came to Shammai. His first address to make conversion, he came to a very strict rabbi. He happened to make a mistake. He came to Shammai, was very, very, he had no patience for these type of people. Amar le, so he told Shammai, Gayereni al menat shetesimeni Kohen Gadol. So I want to you to convert me in order that I should be the Kohen Gadol. Dahafo ve'amata binyan shebiyado. It says, Shammai took a 2x4, and he started to hit him. He says, get out of here, what are you wasting my time? He started to beat him up. He said, I have nothing better to do. You're coming to play games over here. You want to convert so you can be the Kohen Gadol? He thought he's a prankster. Thought he's wasting the rabbi's time. He took a club that he had in his hand. Tach, he hit him. He said, get out of here. But the fellow was persistent. Ba'lifne Hillel. He came in front of Hillel, Shammai's counterpart. Gayre. And Hillel converted him. Amarle. Klum ma'amidi melech. Ela mishi yodea tachsise malchut. Lech lemo tachsise malchut. He says, listen, you want to be a Kohen Gadol? My pleasure. I don't have a problem with that. You want to be a Kohen Gadol? But, you know, listen, even a king, before he's able to become king, he has to study the protocol. How to act like a king. There's not, you just can't become a king. You have to study the etiquette. There's certain rules. There's a certain way of a king. Go study the way of a Kohen Gadol. After you finish studying it, come back and I'll make you a Kohen Gadol. It's a phenomenal approach. So the fellow goes, halach vekara, he went, after he converted, he opens up this perasha, he opens up the subsequent perasha to talk about the Kohen Gadol, vekara, he came to a pasuk that says, vehazar hakarev yumat, that if a stranger goes into the areas where the Kohen Gadol goes, if a stranger walks into those private places, he dies. He didn't know what this pasuk means. So he comes back to Hillel, he says, Rabbi, Mikraz de Almina Emar. What does a stranger mean? Explain to me what a stranger means. I don't know. Who's dying? Amaleso Hillel says, oh, you got to that pasuk? Afilu al David Melech Yisrael. Even if King David, the greatest king that ever came for the Jewish people, is not a Kohen. If King David would go into the place where the Kohen Gadol goes, he dies. So the Ger got scared. Nasa oto Ger kal vahomer ba'asmo. He came along and said, "Uma Yisrael shenikleu banim lemakom." If the Jewish people that are called the children of God, and David, who was the ultimate son of God, he can't go into the Kodesh, I'm going to go into the Kodesh. So he accepted it. He says, "Fine, I'll just convert without becoming a Kohen Gadol." So the rabbis ask a question on Hillel's approach. Hillel was much more tolerant than Shammai. He didn't beat him on the head with a 2x4. He talked to him. He even told him, you know what? We'll make you a Kohen Gadol. Go study, and when you come back, we'll discuss it. How come Hillel didn't tell him right away? Shouldn't he have told him, listen, I'll convert you, but I think my son, Habibi, you're making a mistake. You can't be a Kohen Gadol, because Zara Karev Yumat. Because if you're a foreigner and you're a stranger, you're going to die. How come Hillel didn't tell him that at the conversion? Why does he make him go on a witch hunt till he finds the pasuk himself, and then he realizes he can't be? Save him all the time. Hillel, you're a great rabbi. Why don't you save him all that effort in studying it? Tell him immediately, I'll convert you, but my friend, there's a problem. We can't make you a Kohen Gadol. So the explanation I heard said over is a great, great lesson. Hillel was very smart. Hillel knew that when teaching people a lesson and giving people rebuke or giving people musar or trying to teach something to somebody, there's a time. It's timing. Sometimes it's better for the person to come across the law himself than to preach it to him. Hillel was teaching us a great lesson. At that moment, he knew the Ger was excited. He wanted to become a Kohen. He wanted to wear the clothes. Hillel said, you know what? If I'm going to tell him now, you can't. He doesn't want to hear that now. He's too excited. He's too psyched. You're going to tell him you can't do it? He's going to get burnt. He's going to want to throw in. He's not going to want to become a convert to start off with.
So Hillel was patient and said, you know what? Let him come upon these truths by himself. And we know this to be true. Many times, if we're preached upon, and a rabbi will tell us something's forbidden, right away we have resistance. What do you mean forbidden? Who's the rabbi that tells us asur? Who's them to tell us that we're not allowed to do it? We get a little defensive when people rebuke us. Because even if somebody that's rebuking has to use timing, he has to know when the proper time is that the people will accept it and when not. But the best way to teach somebody is, Hillel was saying, let them come across it themselves. You would know yourself if you were home reading a book, unsolicited. You opened the book yourself, nobody forced you to open it up, and you came across a halakha that said, now you came across it yourself, you say, oh, this is the halakha, this would have to follow. It wasn't preached to you, it wasn't rebuked to you, nobody made you feel guilty about it. Therefore, Hillel was very brilliant. He said, this man's going to have to study religion anyway. Let him come across the law himself at the right time. And you'll see he himself will understand it and accept it. A great Mishnah. One of the things that said about the Kohen Gadol's clothes, he used to wear a choshen. What is a choshen? Aaron used to wear a breastplate on his heart. Like we said, precious stones. So the Gemara says, in what merit did Aharon get to wear this holy vestment? Not everybody got to wear the Choshen Mishpat. What did Aharon do to deserve to wear this holy garment? So the Gemara answers, because Aharon had a great heart. How great was his heart? The Gemara says, Bischar v'ra'acha v'samach b'libo. And Moshe Rabbeinu was commissioned to take the Jewish people out of Egypt. Moshe Rabbeinu was hemming and hawing. No, I don't want to, God. I can't. I have a lisp. He was giving all sorts of excuses. Finally, Borei Olam got it out of Moshe what his real problem was. Moshe did not want to go to be the leader in Egypt because he felt Aharon is going to be slighted. You think about it. Moshe Rabbeinu was in exile for 40 years. His brother is the chief rabbi in Egypt, dealing with all the problems, giving all the classes, dealing with the Jewish people. If anybody would be worthy to be the leader, Aharon put in the most time. And Aharon is older by 3 years. And now what's going to happen? Moshe, the younger brother, who hasn't been around for 40 years, is going to come back, upstage Aharon, and say to Skelem Mitzvot Aharon, you're my secretary, you're the right-hand man, you'll come to me and Aharon might feel slighted. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, God, it's not worth it for me this whole career, it's not worth it to me this whole job, if my brother is going to be offended and slighted in the least bit. So God comes and tells Moshe, not only is Aharon not going to be upset, not only is he not going to be slighted, but he's going to be happy for you. He's going to love it. The fact that his brother, his younger brother, has reached stardom. His younger brother has reached a career that no man has reached. Aharon is genuinely going to be happy for you. Now that's a level that is very difficult for us to reach. And Aharon was that happy. Imagine, Rav Palm writes, Zecher Tzaddik Livracha, two politicians in a race. And the incumbent loses. He has to make a speech now. He has to make a speech congratulating his opponent. And of course he gets up there at the pulpit like a sportsmanship. And he says, I'm very happy for my opponent, and I'm going to work with him, and he's a good guy. Of course, he's acting as if he's very happy and accepting. But in truth, what do you think is going on in that politician's heart? Do you think he's really happy that the other guy won and he lost? Certainly not. He's burning. If he would be able to show his true colors, he starts saying, it's a mistake, the guy's a crook, it's good for nothing guy, what kind of thing is this, recount. but he has to have public posture, so therefore he has to make it as if he's happy with it and he accepts it. But God cannot testify that in this guy's heart, he's truly happy. Aharon, God testified. It wasn't only external. It wasn't like he just told Moshe, I'm very happy for my brother Mabruk. It's beautiful. Good luck. God says in his heart, he had the same feelings. In his heart, he had the same attitude, the same emotion. It was a tremendous level. God says, such a pure heart that has exuded such love to human beings, that's the heart that will wear my breastplate. Because it is the breastplate where Shekhinah rests upon. Only on such a man that is such a loving character. He deserves to have this heart covered in a Hoshen Mishpat. Ladies, this is not an easy trait to reach. I think it's much easier to commiserate with somebody when they're going through hard times than it is to rejoice with them when they're going through good times. You see, when somebody's suffering bar minan, somebody's avelut, somebody's mourning, or somebody's sick, much easier for us to go and feel pain and feel sympathy and, as I said, commiserate with them. Why is that so? But if somebody would win $1 million, or they'd buy a new house, or they'd come on to certain successes, why is it much harder for us to have the same feeling of simcha? The answer is said, it's very simple. Because there's jealousy. You see, we're never jealous of anybody that's mourning. And we're never jealous of anybody that's sick. And we're never jealous of anybody that's losing anything. Therefore, it's easy for us to commiserate with them. Because better them, not us, God forbid. And therefore, we could show, we could cry for them. But if somebody's having a farach, a wedding, a bar mitzvah, something big, then already the jealousy sets in. Why is he doing it and not us? Who is he to do it and not me? And wait, it's nicer, it's prettier. Therefore, it becomes much more difficult. We have resentment. We have all sorts of bad traits that start to take over. Aharon was the opposite. Even when his brother reached a success that he thought he should have accomplished, he was happy as if he won it himself. Most people heard this chitush, but now I'm going to tell you the part that you didn't hear. When Aharon was given the job to become Kohen Gadol, now it was the reverse. Moshe Rabbeinu is the leader, he talks to God, Har Sinai. The Kohen Gadol is the holiest man in our people. He gets to go places where no man can go. As we said, even David HaMelech could not walk in the places of Aharon. You'd think, who's going to be that man? Moshe. And now God tells Moshe, no, go appoint your brother. Now how do you think Moshe Rabbeinu felt when he was told that only Aharon can go into the Holy of Holies? You can't go into the Holy of Holies. If you go into the Holy of Holies, you die. He can get to the closest spot on earth to see God. You might say Moshe Rabbeinu would have felt a little slighted. After all I did, after all my commitment, after everything, where's the payback? You make my brother the Kohen Gadol? And the rabbis tell us, in Tehillim, actually, David HaMelech says, David HaMelech, he tells over the story in his own words of when Aharon was anointed Kohen Gadol. How was he anointed? Moshe Rabbeinu took special oil and he poured it on Aharon's head. And it says the oil dripped down Aharon's head down to his beard. That's the way he was anointed to Kohen Gadol. But David tells the story in his own words and he says, Hine matov uman na'im, shevet achim gam yachad. David says, how beautiful, how pleasant, how nice, how sweet is it when two brothers get along and coexist together. There's nothing more beautiful than harmony amongst brothers. Hine matov uman na'im. How beautiful it is, shevet achim gam yachad. Who is he referring to? Which brotherhood? The brotherhood of Moshe and Aharon. And he continues. He says, "Kashemen atov ala rosh," like the good oil that rolled down the head of Aharon, "Yored ala zakan," that dripped down to his beard, Zekan Aharon. So the rabbis ask a question. How many beards did Aharon have? Because the pasuk says, She hayored ala zakan, that rolled down the beard, Zekan Aharon, the beard of Aharon. Why does it have to say beard, beard, Zekan, Zekan? It only went down Aharon's beard. Why does it say Zekan, Zekan Aharon? So the rabbis tell us, you know how excited Moshe Rabbeinu was? When he was pouring the oil on his brother to appoint him, to anoint him as Kohen Gadol, he actually felt that the oil was dripping down his beard. He was so excited for his brother that the pasuk says he felt after that anointment that he walked away being the Kohen Gadol. There was no jealousy, there was no acrimony, there was no resentment. Kashemen atov ala rosh hayored ala zakan zekan Aharon. This was the mutual relationship between Aharon and Moshe, and Moshe and Aharon. What exactly did this choshen, did this breastplate accomplish? The Torah tells us that it had etched on the stones the names of the 12 tribes. Reuven, Shimon, Levi, etc. And a few other words that were written. Whenever there was a dilemma amongst the Jewish people, that the Jewish people needed to know an answer, how to proceed. For example, should we go to war? Should we not go to war? Are we going to be successful? Which tribe should lead us in war? How would they figure out the answer to these questions? They would go to Aharon, or they would go to the Kohen Gadol of their time. And the Kohen Gadol would pose the question to God, and all of a sudden, the letters of the stones would start flashing. We call them Urim. Urim comes from the word Or. The letters would start flashing. Yud, He, Vav, Dalet, He, Yehuda. Oh, now they knew Yehuda is going to be the one that leads the Jewish people into the war. Are we going to be successful? Ken, Lo. But it wasn't so simple as that, the rabbis tell us. The letters did not come out in a way that it was easy to decipher. The letters came out boggled. And then the Kohen had to decipher exactly how to place the letters in which order. Now, in many instances, it was possible that the letters that were lighting up could be spelling different words. And based on the Kohen Gadol's ability to place the words in the right order, it would affect the answer. The Gemara tells a famous story where a Kohen Gadol made a great mistake in reading the Urim V'Tumim. The Kohen Gadol was Eli. Eli HaKohen was sitting in the Mishkan, and Hana came. Hana is the wife of Elkanah. She's married for many years. She has no children. She was bitter. She wanted a child in the worst way. So she came to the Beit HaMikdash where Eli was there, and she started to pour her heart out to Borei Olam, and she was crying, and she was murmuring to herself. Eli saw her, and he started to look at his Urim V'Tumim to see exactly what's going on with this lady. What is she doing over here? And all of a sudden, the letters started to appear. Shin, Chaf, Resh, He. He understood that these letters spelled the word Shikora. A drunkard lady. A drunkard lady's coming and murmuring and talking, and she was making hand gestures that were not modest. So he comes along to her, and right away he indicts her. He says, what are you doing? Admataita shtakarin. Until when are you going to be drunk? What are you doing in the Beit HaMikdash? You're not allowed to be here. Go home. Sober up. What kind of business is this? He gives a strong musar. And then Hana turns to Eli and says, Lo Adoni. Know my master. But the Gemara says she was saying much more than know my master. She was saying, no, you're not a master of reading the Urim V'Tumim. You messed up. You don't know how to read it. It's not supposed to be read Shikora. It could be read Keshera. Keshera, she's a kosher lady. She's good. Or it could be read even better, Kesara. She's like Sarah Imenu. Halita, she doesn't have a baby. Sarah was barren for many years. You're calling me drunk? Borei Olam's telling you I'm like Sarah Imenu, and you think I'm Shikora? Eli felt terrible, obviously. Eli came and said, please forgive me. it's a mistake. I judged you. I didn't give you the chaf zechut. I didn't give you the benefit of the doubt. He blessed her, and as a result of Eli's blessing, she came back the next year with the baby, who was Shemuel HaNavi. But you see over here that it's not enough for the Kohen to see the letters. He has to have the brilliance to figure it out. So I saw one rabbi say, where is the Urim V'Tumim today? Today, where do we go to find out dilemmas and problems? So the rabbi said, obviously all our problems have their answers in the Torah somewhere. Each pasuk of the Torah is light. But if only we'd be able to find out which pasuk is coming to address our specific problem. Many hachamim have the ability to find out which pasukim are referring to the subject at hand. But few hachamim know which one is the exact one. You see, if a question is asked to most hachamim, they could say, well, maybe it's in this parasha because it discusses it, this parasha. That's the Urim. They know where the lights are. But there's another stage. You have to know how to decipher it. You have to know which one is specifically answering that question. That is only in the hands of the Gedolei HaDor. Only the greatest rabbis of the generation, and these are you can count on your fingers, possess this trait of the Kohen Gadol, that are not only able to find where the answer is, but to decipher it in a proper way in order to give proper answers. Torah then tells us of the coat of the Kohen Gadol. The coat of the Kohen Gadol was lined on the bottom with bells. And there's great lessons learned from these bells. The Yerushalmi learns from here a great lesson in Derech Eretz. The Yerushalmi says the Kohen Gadol is entering God's house. It wouldn't be proper for him to enter without announcing himself first. It's not respectful, it's not ethical to enter somebody's home without knocking for it. You just walk into somebody's room. So therefore the Kohen Gadol had bells in order as he walks into the Holy of Holies, it's as if he's announcing himself, as if the people that are in the Kodesh should become prepared. God doesn't need this. God's always prepared. God knows exactly what the Kohen Gadol is doing without ringing the bell. So the lesson is not for the Kohen Gadol. The lesson is for us. From here, Rabbi Yochanan learned a great lesson. He never would come home without being announced first. He'd either bang on the door, or he'd let his wife know before he entered. A great lesson that we must teach our children. Our children, many times, when a parent is in a room, they barge into the room. They come in without announcing themselves. Very unethical. We must teach our children, they must knock. This is not only ethical because Emily Post says it's ethical. It's ethical because the Torah is saying even a Kohen Gadol needed bells. It's a great lesson we must tell our children. Go outside again and come in and knock. You cannot just walk in unannounced. A husband, when he comes home, this I heard from one of my rabbis in Eretz Yisrael. He had a rule like this. He wasn't as extreme as Rabbi Yochanan. When he used to come home alone, he used to come into the house unannounced. Because his wife is there, he's home, he's not worried about anything. His wife's expecting him. But whenever he came home with a guest, certainly he had to ring the bell. So his wife would always know that she has to cover her hair. If she covers her hair, she has to dress smart, something to prepare the house. But never to walk into a home with a guest, unannounced, but people don't know that you're coming. It's very offensive. People are not prepared. Derech Eretz. You have to let them clean themselves, prepare themselves, not to be embarrassed of the situation. This is one lesson you learn from the bells. Rabbi Gifter says there's another lesson you learn from the bells. He said, Alav HaShalom, the rabbi said, any time the Kohen Gadol moved, the slightest movement, the slightest action that he took, there was a consequence. You heard ringing. Even if he just pushed one foot in front of the other by 6 inches, you heard jingling. No action of the Kohen Gadol went wasted. Every action, there was a repercussion. And the rabbi says that's the lesson to man. any action that he does in life, there's going to be great repercussions in heaven. Don't think a person does a small mitzvah, it didn't affect anything, it didn't do anything. Every little thing that he does, at any moment in his life, there's bells going off. Sometimes louder bells than others. From here he learns not to mizalzel, not to mistreat light mitzvot. Person says in answering an amen, this is not such an important mitzvah. Or saying a baruchu baruch shemo, or making a blessing. This is not as a bikur holim, or this is not as learning Torah. He says, don't underestimate any mitzvah. Every step the Kohen Gadol walked, there was noise. To teach you that even an insignificant act, Chas v'Shalom, no, none of the mitzvot are insignificant. Even a small mitzvah, if we can say such a thing, has its repercussions. Lastly, there's a lesson from the bells of the Kohen Gadol. It says the bells, they were in sequence. The Torah says, Pa'amon v'rimon, Pa'amon v'rimon. There was a metal bell, and next to it, a piece of cloth in the shape of a pomegranate. The bell is called the Pa'amon, and the pomegranate is called the Rimon. And that's the way it went throughout the whole rim of the garment, the hem of the garment. Pa'amon, Rimon, Pa'amon, Rimon. That was the pattern. It was alternating between a Pa'amon and a Rimon. But the Torah tells it to us in a very interesting way that the Al-Sheikh says there's a great lesson to be learned. The Torah tells us there was one Pa'amon surrounded by two Rimonim. A Pa'amon in the middle, a Rimon on the right, and a Rimon on the left. Now he says, for the same money, you could have told it to us the other way also. You could have told it to us one Rimon surrounded by two bells. I mean, it's the same thing. If it's a sequence pattern, so it depends how you look at it. So why would the Torah choose the option to say one bell surrounded by two pomegranates? So he says like this. The bell made noise. The pomegranates did not make noise. To come and teach men that for every measure of speech, he has to have two measures of silence. Which means you have to be quiet twice as much as you talk. The Torah is telling you there's one bell and there's two pomegranates, which means don't talk so much. Siyag l'chokhma shetika. The Gemara tells a story. Once Shlomo HaMelech said, Shlomo said, Yafeh shetika l'chachamim. Shetika is good. Silence is beneficial even to wise men. Kol sheken l'tepeshim. Or the more so for imbeciles. And then he went to say, Gam evil maharish hacham yachashev. That when an imbecile is quiet, people will think he's smart. So when he said this statement, the rabbis of the Sanhedrin said, what do you mean, Shlomo? We're going to misunderstand the person's reticence to say that he's a smart man? Shlomo said, one day you'll understand. One day Shlomo took an ama'aris. He took an ignoramus from the street. He had a beard. So he dressed him up like a rabbi. He put a hat on him. He put a black coat on him. He put a gemara under his arm. He told him, how much you get paid a day? He said, I get $50 a day. He said, I'll give you $100 a day. You work for me. So he dressed him up like this. He said, I want you to go visit the rabbis. They're convening now in the Sanhedrin. Don't open your mouth, but whenever they ask you, don't say anything. It's fine. Shlomo HaMelech tells him. So he walks into the Sanhedrin. Of course, he's a man. He has a beard. He has a big look. He has a glorified look to himself. All the rabbis in the Sanhedrin, of course, stand up for him. Baruch haba, hacham, please. They put him in the front of the table. And the rabbis are judging a difficult case back and forth. So they turn to the guest rabbi, hacham, what's your opinion? So the rabbi says like this with his hands. It goes like this. So they say, wow, what a gaoni is over here. He doesn't even want to answer us. We're too shallow for him. He's not even paying attention to us. And then they go the other way and they say, Hakam, what do you think? He goes like this and they say, psh, Then Shlomo HaMelech greets them during their lunch break. Tell me the Hiddush today in the yeshiva. Ooh, we had a rabbi, he came, he sat with us. He says, bring me this rabbi that sat with you. So the rabbi comes, the fellow. Shlomo says, open your mouth. He starts, Aleph, Bet, Gimel. He says, this is Aleph, Bet, he's stuttering. This is the Hakam you're talking about. He says, now you understand what it means. That even a fool that keeps quiet, people will think he's a Tamid Hakam. Therefore, if Hakamim should keep quiet, all the more so regular people should keep quiet in order they could listen. But there's another story told about a fellow called Tuvia Harofe. Not Tuvia Harofe, Tuvia Hadayan. There was a certain judge. His name was Tuvia. He was a judge in the courts for many years, and he decided to retire. He was going to retire and live on a secluded island. The only problem was, he needed to swim in the lake that separates where he was from the island. Tuvia Harofe didn't, Hadayan did not know how to swim. So he stood at the shore until somebody met him and says, Tuvia, how can I help you? He said, I need to get from this side to the other side, but I can't swim. He says, well, of course I'll help you, my pleasure. The guy's thinking, he's a judge. One day I'll need him in court. I'll do him a favor now, and then when I get a parking ticket or something, Tuvia, I did you a favor, let me off. So he's swimming, he's taking him. All of a sudden, they're almost at the end to the other side. Tuvia starts a conversation. And he says, you know, I just retired yesterday. He says, what, retired? He flips him over, and Tuvia drowns. The guy gets to the other side, the people say, what did you do? What did you do? You killed the guy, you drowned him. He says, it wasn't me. He says, as long as I thought that he was a judge, he weighed like a feather on my back. But once I found that he retired, he was like a piano. I couldn't tolerate his weight. And the rabbis say, Tuvia, what did you open your mouth for? What are you talking for? He just wanted to make conversation. I retired. I'm this, that. You can only lose. You didn't open your mouth. You were successful. Once a person opens his mouth and starts talking, he becomes vulnerable. Therefore, the Torah is telling us, there's one ta'amon surrounded by two demonim to teach you, like the rabbis say in Gemara, and they, of course the English people also say this, but they stole it, they plagiarized it from the Gemara. The Gemara says, Mila besela, mishtoka betren. Mila besela means a word is worth one coin. Mishtoka, silence, is worth two. Which means it's much more difficult not to talk. You have to be a umman, the Gemara says. You have to be a craftsman not to talk. Anybody can talk. A baby talks. But the Gemara says one more statement about this. Gemara says, Istira bilgina kish kish karya. What does this mean? If you have a tzedakah box, and there's one coin in the box, kish kish karya, makes a lot of noise. You shake it, oh, the coin's jingling, banging the sides of the walls. Istira bilgina, a coin in a box, kish kish karya, makes a lot of noise. But a full charity box doesn't make any noise. Therefore, usually, who are the people that are always talking? Usually the people that don't have too much wisdom in their mind. So the wisdom is clanking back and forth. The one or two things that they do think that they know. Therefore, they make a lot of noise. They're constantly talking, I know, giving an opinion, giving an answer. It's the empty head that makes the noise. But the head that's filled with wisdom, you don't hear anything. They listen, and that's how they become smart, because they take in information. They understand by giving information out, they don't gain anything. But by listening, they're taking in. That's how they become smart. This week, being that there's a special parasha that we're reading, Parashat Zakor. Should be reminded to the ladies that this week's reading is the most important reading of the entire year. According to many hachamim, ladies are obligated to hear this reading. Ladies are never obligated to come to shul. They're not obligated to come to shul on Shabbat. They're not obligated to come to shul on Rosh Hashanah or Kippur even. But when it comes to Shabbat Zachor, according to many opinions, they must hear Parashat Zachor, three Pesukim from the Sefer Torah. So if there was ever a Shabbat during the year that you're deciding to come to Knis, It should be the Shabbat. This would be the most important Shabbat to be in the Knis, to hear those Pesukim, to fulfill a mitzvah from the Torah. Certainly, if you can't get a babysitter, you're taking care of the children, Hacham Avadya says you're exempt, and you can stay home. But if you're able to work it out, it's better to come this week in order to fulfill your obligation. What do we read this week? What's the parasha? We read about how Amalek, the arch enemy of the Jewish people, came and attacked us on the way out of Egypt. As we explained in the previous classes, at a time where the world was awestricken from the Jewish people, where people thought the Jews were untouchable, Amalek came and attacked us. So the Torah says, Zachor et asher asa lecha Amalek. Remember what Amalek did. So the Rabbi Magid Meduvna gives an example. What are we remembering exactly? Who wants to remember? We want to remember what Amalek did? They killed us. Who wants to remember such a thing? We want to forget what they did to us. Torah says, Lo tishkach, don't forget. Why not forget? It was a tragedy. So the explanation he says is, there was once a king, and the king had a loyal friend. And the king, of course, had security protecting his garden. He had the most delicious fruits in the garden. He had dogs lined up at the fence that nobody could see these dogs until you opened the gate, and then the dogs would attack. One day, the king is sitting in his palace, and all of a sudden he hears the dogs attacking and biting, and he hears a guy screaming. He looks out of his window, and he sees his loyal friend broke into the gate, and the dogs were eating him up. The king couldn't believe it. My best friend broke into the palace. He's trying to steal from me. I cannot let this go unrebuked. The next day, the friend walks in as if nothing happened. He's in a suit. My dear king. So, oh, my dear friend. So the king tells him, please, I owe you an apology. He's telling his friend this. I owe you an apology. These dogs that came along and bit you, I'm surprised they bit you. They don't know who you are. They don't know that you're my friend. I'm terribly embarrassed. These dogs I'm going to put to death. They should know not to bite you. When he heard that, he said, Dakhil, like the king knows that I was in his... He told him in a nice way. He made him believe it was the dog's fault. Those dogs, they shouldn't bite you. You're good. You're my friend. He realized that he got caught. The same thing, Borei Olam, he wants to rebuke us. Amalek is only able to come and attack us if we were deficient, if we weren't fulfilling the mitzvot. Amalek can only come when we're guilty. Therefore, God comes along and says, remember what that Amalek did, you machshemo, he came and attacked you. That good-for-nothing dog, that kelb, what he did. But what you're supposed to think in your mind, Borei Olam is really telling us in a nice way, we were guilty. And therefore, when you're remembering Amalek, God's really trying to tell you, remember what you did in order to have the dog sick you and attack you. Amalek's not guilty. Amalek can't touch us if we're not deficient. And therefore, we must correct our own ways. One thing that, of course, doesn't apply to the people that come to classes. Unfortunately, most words of rebuke do not apply to people that come to class. It's usually the people that are not in the class that need to hear words of rebuke. When we mention bad practice that causes Amalek and the enemies of the Jewish people to attack, there is one bad practice specifically that has infiltrated our community. Certainly I might be naive to an extent, and you might say this has infiltrated for many years, but it's not enough that our parties, our weddings, for example, are not done in the most modest of ways. This already, Lachamim closed their eyes to an extent. It's not enough that the ladies, even under the chuppah, are dressing quite immodestly. Of course, the Hakamim spoke about this, but it's difficult. People are not ready yet to listen. It takes time. It has to be over the course of many years. But a terrible practice, not alone that people are mixed dancing, which already is a terrible travesty, and Bar Minan is a great curse for the community. Al Tiftach Pe'le Satan. But even in the mixed dancing, there's mixed dancing. Which means people are dancing with other people's wives, bar minnan. Harpa, uchlima, ubusha. What a humiliation, and what a shame, and what a disgusting trait that is infiltrated. Torah says, lotin af, do not commit adultery. This is a form of adultery, bar minnan. It causes Am Yisrael to lose all their blessings. Certainly, Borei Olam is not there anyway because of all the piritzut. But on top of it, that people have no compunction. People have no shame. On video, where people are watching, like Zimri, that went and took Kozbi Batsur or Goya in front of everybody and committed an act of frivolity, an act of promiscuity. Such a thing to go on at our Hatunot, where people have no... It starts with a social kiss. And look where it led to. When Hachamim was speaking that you're not supposed to kiss other people. Nah, Hacham, it's only a social kiss. No kavana. Hachamim was so brilliant. They know where these things lead to. It starts with a social kiss, think being derecheres and nice. And now it leads to these things over here. Where everybody's dancing with each other without any. Zachor et asher asar lecha Amalek. Remember Amalek. Amalek didn't do anything. Remember that you got caught. The dog caught you because of your iniquity. The dog caught us because of our guilt. This message must be spread. It's haram that it has to be talked about. God forbid somebody should have to listen to this tape and hear what the rebuke for our community is. That's not anymore. You're not learning enough Torah. Not enough. You're not eating a kosher. Already we have to talk about things that the preachers in the Abid have to talk to their constituents about. We have to talk to our holy people. It's intolerable. This custom must be stopped. And Bezat Hashem, this will keep the dogs away, meaning the enemies of Am Yisrael. And Bezat Hashem, the Pasuk says, La Yehudim, Aita, Ora, V'Simcha, V'Sason, V'Kar, Amen, V'Amen.